There is so much to want in this world. And we are constantly bombarded with messages telling us what we should want: cars and clothes and computers, a new house, a new spouse, books and eye thingies and ice cream. And we learn to want so young. When many years ago, one of the young people in my life was little, about four. He was in a phase when he wanted just about everything he saw. "Can you buy me that?" was his constant refrain. And I learned to say, "Sure, later," because he soon forgot. So one day at my apartment, he went to use the bathroom. He came running out, yelling, "Lindsay, your toilet is so cool. Will you buy me that toilet?" "Sure." Another day, something else caught his eye. "Lindsay, that whatever it was, it's so cool. Will you buy me that?" I said, "Okay, but I thought you wanted the toilet." Oh, yeah, he replied, "The toilet. It's so cool. The water goes down and then it comes right back up." Oh, to be 4 years old. The world is full of wonders and of wanting. Now that doesn't end with childhood. And there's plenty to want besides stuff, besides houses and cars and toilets. There's money, fame, sex, power, control, attention, admiration. Even Jesus' disciples wanted honor and glory, or at least acknowledgement. They wanted to be deemed the greatest. Those conflicts and disputes among you, where do they come from? James asks in today's epistle reading. Do they not come from your cravings that are at war within you? You want something and do not have it, so you commit murder. And you covet something and cannot obtain it, so you engage in disputes and conflicts. James got that right. I mean, not necessarily the murder part, but just look at the world. Look at our country. Coveting, wanting, arguing. Our country, our community. You know, I have even heard tell, and I don't believe it for a second, but I have even heard tell of conflicts in churches. Imagine. We want what's ours by right. We want things done the way we want them done. We want change, or we want things not to change. Want, 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 want. In the autumn of 2006, the Reverend Dr. Forrest Church, who was then senior minister of All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in New York City, was told by his doctor, "There's no way to dance around this, Forrest. You have what appears to be inoperable cancer." "How long do I have?" Church asked. "Months," was the reply. Well, it turned out it was years, about 3 years. And Reverend Church, a prolific author, used that time to write two more books. One is a slim volume called Love and Death. And in this book, Church shared his own journey through the valley of the shadow of death. He also shared what he called his mantra, the words to live by, which he developed over his 30 years in ministry. His mantra goes, "Want what you have, do what you can, Be who you are. There's a Zen-like quality to these words, a quality of serenity and acceptance and peace. But Forest Church, a Unitarian Universalist, had a different theology than ours in many respects. And we might find it easy to read his tenet, want what you have, as a theology of either self-satisfaction, I'm fine just the way I am, thank you very much, or perhaps of diminished expectations. I don't dare to want. I don't dare to hope. I don't dare to pray, lest my prayers go unanswered. Church actually said, pray for the right things, and often the things you already pray for the right things, often the things you already have, but tend to take for granted, and your prayers will be answered. It almost sounds like he's saying, don't ask too much of God. But we affirm that God can do great things. And the history of the world is the story not just of conflict and warfare, but of successful struggles for justice and equality. Of people not just wanting, but demanding what they do not have. Equal opportunity, fair treatment, decent working conditions, freedom from want and fear, and COVID. Want what you have. It seems like the flip side of James is you do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask wrongly in order to spend what you get on your pleasures. And if we misread that, we're imagining what has been called the vending machine God. Put in the correct change, and out comes what you want. How much harm has been done by an insistence that there's a right way to pray? But prayer, as we pondered last week, it's not just asking, it's talking and listening to God. It's being bold enough and perhaps foolish enough to bare our very souls to God, trusting that God will hear our prayers and answer them in God's own time and God's own way. Nonetheless, I believe that Forest Church and James are both right in their insistence that disordered desires bring the opposite of peace in our hearts and our world. They bring conflict and destruction. Wanting what we have is about grace and gratitude, about recognizing the blessings we have been given, about the joys of the present moment. Forest Church reported that his friends questioned his mantra. They'd say, do you really want cancer, Forest? Well, he said, did I want cancer? Of course not. But to obsess on the bad things that befall us squeezes out an appreciation for the good. The time we waste on wishful thinking or regret detracts from the time we might devote to being grateful for all that is ours here and now to savor and embrace. I think we know the wisdom of that. We just forget. James saying, you ask and do not receive because you ask wrongly isn't about using the wrong words or not having enough faith. I think he's advising against asking for what we do not, in the end, need. Now, I found in my notes about this passage. Also a quote from another person who was living with terminal cancer at the time, the actor, Patrick Swayze. About a year after his diagnosis and a year before his death, Swayze told Barbara Walters, "I keep my heart and my soul and my spirit open to miracles." But he added, he did not plan to pursue every experimental treatment that came along. "If I were to spend so much time chasing staying alive," he said, "I wouldn't be able to enjoy the time I have left. I want to live," he told Walters. He wanted to live even more, it seems, than he wanted not to die. When in the Gospel of Mark, Jesus offers his third prediction of the suffering and death he must undergo and the resurrection that will follow, the disciples for the third time fail to understand and end up arguing among themselves. "What were you arguing about?" Jesus demands. They fall silent because they sense how inappropriate it is, this argument about who is the greatest. But how human. To distract themselves from Jesus' words about death with a stupid argument about who's the best. Despite their guilty silence, Jesus seems to know what's up. Yet he doesn't say, "Don't strive to be great." He invites them instead to reimagine what greatness is. He has told them of the cross, but it seems they just can't wrap their minds around that. So Jesus acts out a parable, physically welcoming a child into the disciples' midst. This is what God's greatness looks like. The lowly lifted up, the last become first. Sovereignty as servanthood. It is not our desire that James and Jesus reject, but what we desire. Remember the parable of the good sower who sows the word, which takes root for some, and others are those sown seeds, are those sown among the thorns. They are the ones who hear the word, but the cares of the world and the lure of wealth and the desire for other things come in and choke the word, and it yields nothing. Yet, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. And what about this? "If anyone wants to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me." There is want and self-denial in the very same breath. Not giving up our desires, but reordering our desires. Not desiring in accordance with the world's values, money and things and power and the high regard of others, but desiring in accordance with God's values, humility and service and gratitude and the deep regard of God. Our desires, our wants are in good working order, you might say, when we are at peace with ourselves, with our neighbors, with God. Wanting what we have. It's not the end, perhaps, but the beginning. The beginning of wholeness. Freed from wanting unattainable, unnecessary, unbeneficial things, we are freed to hunger for righteousness, to thirst for God, to live in a world that is full of wonders. 17th century poet and pastor John Donne wrote, "There is nothing that God hath established in the constant course of nature but would seem a miracle and exercise our admiration if it were done but once. One sunrise, stunning. One baby's smile, incredible. One life, miraculous. Our world is full of miracles, and they are ours. Ours for the living, ours for the sharing. The water goes down, and it comes right back up. Central Park is a glorious green oasis. Sunlight turns the Hudson into a ribbon of silver. The air is filled with music and laughter. Tears shed together are sacraments of grace. God's love, unwavering, unending, unfathomable. These are what we have. What do you want?" And to God alone be the glory. Amen.